What you are about to hear is not.
Not
a podcast. This is a global conversation recorded live in real time with real people.
Journalists.
Business leaders.
Academics. Politicians.
I think the term's a deep state.
Oh dear.
Investors.
Experts.
Diplomats.
Citizens.
Coming together from around the world to share their views and ask our guests the questions. If you would like to join this conversation or hear our incredible library of past conversations, please visit our website, pm101.club, and join the fastest growing conscious community on the free internet. Thanks for being here.
Enjoy
the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Politics and Media 101. I'm Jeff Browning, and if you listened to our first few episodes, then you know that over the last few months, my friend Justin Higgins and I and our friends have convened hundreds of conversations, sometimes more than once per day, with up to 30,000 live listeners and participants, where we hear live and direct from people in the news, in their own voices, in their own words, in long form, and where anyone who wants to can join to ask them a question, share their thoughts, or just listen. We're just now starting to release recorded portions of our live conversations for the first time, and we're grateful to you for joining us. Today, we're excited to release part of a conversation, interview, and audience Q&A we had with Andrew Lawrence of Media Matters. In our last episode, we talked about the information ecosystem and whether big tech companies simply have too much power over what we see and don't see, what we learn, and how we view the world. In this show, we're doing a deeper dive into another power center and core aspect of the information ecosystem, TV news. For anyone who hasn't heard of Media Matters, where Andrew works, they're an organization who watches TV, literally who watches all of cable news TV, Fox, MSNBC, and everything in between. They listen very carefully to all of it, they identify places where TV news is simply wrong or out of sync with reality, and then they issue reports pointing out those inaccuracies. They listen to outlets on both sides, but they do have a reputation for leaning left. This means that as a senior director for Rapid Response, Andrew is very knowledgeable about what these cable networks actually do, how they operate, what their motives are, and importantly, where they're sometimes not truthful with their viewers. It was a fascinating conversation, we had incredible audience questions, and we hope you enjoy it. As always, if you like or dislike what you hear, if you want to find out how to join us live almost every day of the week, maybe ask one of our upcoming guests a question, or hear past episodes, please visit our website, pm101.live or pm101.club. They both work and will get you to the same place where you can find all that and more. Without any further ado, let's roll the tape.
Andrew, I just want to start out here, man. What is Media Matters and what is your role in the organization?
Sure. Yeah. Media Matters is, we describe ourselves as a liberal media watchdog group. And basically what we do is we watch cable news, and that a lot of people don't know this, but that includes MSNBC and CNN as well as Fox News. We listen to conservative talk radio. And what we do is we point out the misinformation. A lot of the stuff that we do is simply taking the exact words that these people have said and making it public. I think that, you know, a lot of these hosts, a lot of these people, they speak, they're very confined into their little bubble, and they still have influence. They have a lot of influence inside conservative pucks, inside Congress, you know, stuff that they say gets turned into investigations, congressional hearings, that type of stuff. A lot of people, if you're not a hardcore conservative, you're not watching or listening to this stuff, but it's important that people know this, know what they're saying, know what they're doing, know the policies that they're pushing, because they have an outsized influence. And so that's kind of what we do. You know, we fact check conservative media. We try to stop this stuff before it grows and before it takes root in the more mainstream media outlets. And we just try to point out what's true and what isn't. There's really no secret to it. My role, I work on the night shift. My title is Deputy Director of Rapid Response, and that's pretty much what we do, is just rapid stuff. So I have a whole team of researchers underneath me, and my job is basically to quarterback that. So, you know, we have people that listen. They let us know what's going on Fox News, talk radio, the different podcasts that we listen to and watch. And my job is to sort of determine what needs action and what that action is. Are we going to, does this rise to the level that it needs a full-blown fact check? Is what they said just so terrible that we can just clip it and put it right up on our website and people will understand that it's terrible, that type of thing. So that's basically my day to day, really.
And just what you hit on, there are a lot of people don't watch Fox News from the beginning of a show to the end of the show, but they do kind of understand the thrust of some of their shows because of tweets or clips that go viral for a variety of reasons, whether it's a progressive organization or a conservative organization sending out that information. You're watching this stuff all day, and in your case, all night. What do people who only see the viral clips not know about Fox News and maybe just conservative media as a whole?
That's a really interesting question, actually. And, you know, I think that one thing that has frustrated me lately, you know, I would say in the last year or so, is the way that the Overton window has kind of shifted. Particularly, I'm just going to use like Tucker Carlson as an example, to where, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, he said that immigration makes America dirtier and poorer, and there was a huge uproar over that, and there were calls for him to be fired. There were advertiser boycotts, stuff like that. Now, here we are a couple of years later. He's pushing the windowless great replacement theory every single night, and it's barely a blip on the radar. So I think, like, it's tough for us at Media Matters that it's become so outrageous. Everything that they do is so outrageous that almost nothing is outrageous at this point. And that's kind of frustrating for me, because we can't sit there and fact check like everything that they say. And you look at, like, if you sat down, you know, people don't realize how out there this stuff is. And if people sat down at Fox News from 8 until 11 o'clock every single night for a week, I think they would be floored by what takes place on that network. It's really out there. It's really crazy. I mean, they're talking about vaccination requirements as apartheid and worse than Jim Crow and stuff like that. It's just very out there. And I don't think people understand that. I think the other thing that people really need to understand is that this is like all a grift. Like it's all for money. And you take a look at the way that they attack vaccination mandates right now. And not just the government's vaccination mandates. They've attacked companies that have vaccination mandates, but they work for a company with a very stringent vaccination mandate. And that has not been brought up a single time on the network. Nobody has quit. Nobody has been fired. They sit there and they complain, or they comply, and they submit to Fox's mandate because they're giving them a giant paycheck every 2 weeks. But then they get that paycheck because they're keeping their audience engaged and enraged by attacking vaccination mandates. So it's such a grift. And that's one thing that I think people need to understand a little bit better.
So you just hit on Tucker Carlson saying some pretty inflammatory things. I mean, he just went to Hungary and palled around with a wannabe authoritarian holding him up. But when Tucker Carlson takes heat in the media for inflammatory statements, Fox News execs tend to respond that him, Hannity, Ingram, and other political on-air personalities, they're just opinion hosts that are separate from the news hosts. And if people actually watched their news section, people, Bret Baier, Chris Wallace, Martha McCallum, they would have a different opinion of what Fox News actually is, what Fox News is actually trying to accomplish. So I guess my question is, how would you respond to this? Is this a fair assessment or not?
No, I think it's completely unfair. I think that I know what they do. I know what Bret Baier does, Chris Wallace does, all of them. First of all, mention the exact same thing, just with a different veneer. It's just a different atmosphere. It looks a little bit more newsy. Okay. So I think that's first of all. Second of all, like, they push Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, their new clown show that they have at 7 o'clock. They say that that's opinion, and that's how they get away with all this stuff. You watch those shows, they do not present any of this stuff as opinion. I mean, you had a couple of weeks ago, after the George Floyd trial, after Chauvin was found guilty of murder and everything, you have Tucker Carlson up there saying that George Floyd wasn't murdered, that he died of a drug overdose. He's not saying that as his opinion. He is stating that as fact. And that's just, you know, one example right there. So, you know, they get away with a lot of BS by just passing it off as opinion. But if you watch these shows, what they're saying, they're not presenting it as their opinion. They're presenting this as fact. Like, you watch Tucker Carlson, he's saying as a fact the Democrats, I mean, this incompetent party that can't even pass an infrastructure bill right now, he's saying the Democrats are trying to replace an entire population of white people with immigrants. I mean, that's not true, but he sits there. He's not stating that as opinion. He's stating that as fact. And he says it. He will say, this is a fact that I am telling you right now. And it's such a cop-out by Fox News. And then I think additionally, you know, you bring up Bret Baier and Chris Wallace and whatever, these guys that supposedly have integrity. You can't work at Fox News and have integrity. Like, I'm sorry. Anybody that works there right now that is making money off of a network that is pushing vaccine misinformation, COVID misinformation, and white supremacy, like, you can't get a paycheck from that company and have integrity.
So I guess the follow-up to that is, wouldn't Fox News be, in your eyes, not my eyes, but from your perspective, wouldn't they be worse without Chris Wallace and the quote-unquote hard news that they do? And wouldn't it make it more difficult?
Absolutely not, because what Chris Wallace and Bret Baier do, what's more valuable to them than the ratings that they give them is what your last question was. Like, well, Fox News has some people there that do real news that have integrity. And so that's why they can put up Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity. And those are the real faces of the network. Those are the people that are pushing the agenda. Those are the ones that have the inside track to Republican politicians that, you know, will turn what their nonsense into congressional hearings. So Bret Baier and Chris Wallace, they're being used. I mean, they're essentially useful idiots for Fox News, for them to say, no, we're a real news network. You know, we have these guys. Don't worry about the opinion later, which is basically all that anybody watches when they watch Fox News, is the opinion people later. So no, I mean, they're just being used by Fox to sort of give them that whiff of integrity.
I wanted to ask, Andrew, what's the difference then between what MSNBC does and what Fox News does?
Well, you know, at first I would say that all cable news is garbage. You know, there's no need for 24/7 news, and they need filler, and so they fill it with nonsense. You know, and people ask me all the time, like, oh, what about MSNBC and CNN? They're awful too. Like, sorry, so I want to start there. But I think the main difference is the influence that these channels have versus Fox News. You know, like I said, especially during the Trump era, you know, if you watched Fox News Primetime or Fox and Friends, which were, you know, supposedly opinion shows, you watch those shows during the Trump years, and the next day, a couple of days later, what they said was being turned into an executive order. You know, you don't have Don Lemon or Chris Hayes having their monologues being turned into executive orders, even when Democrats are in control, you know? So, excuse me. So, you know, I think that's, first of all, is just the influence size. Second of all, like, Fox News is dangerous. Whereas, look, I understand CNN, MSNBC, some of the stuff that they say, you know, pushing the Russia investigation or the stuff they said about, like, Malaysia Flight 370, I think it was, stuff like that. It's ridiculous, okay? It's ridiculous. But Fox News, when they're pushing the great replacement theory, or when they're saying that there's an invasion at the border, they are inspiring mass shootings. Like, that's not even up for debate, you know? And you can go back years. This isn't like a recent phenomenon. You had George, who was an abortion doctor, who was murdered. And that was after months of Bill O'Reilly labeling this guy, George Hiller, the baby killer, I think, you know? You take a look at, there was a Planned Parenthood shooting in Denver, Colorado. That came after months of them pushing those fake videos that said that Planned Parenthood was selling baby parts for Lamborghinis. So there's, don't get me wrong, CNN and MSNBC, not a huge fan, but like, it just doesn't compare to the damage being done to this country by Fox News. And, you know, you take a look at our current situation in the pandemic. You take a look at Fox News viewers are way less likely to get the vaccine than non-Fox viewers, you know? So it's stuff like that where they're just, they are responsible for a lot of death and destruction in this country, whereas like CNN and MSNBC just aren't. They don't have that influence that Fox News does. And I think this is a culmination. You've had Fox News for almost 20, their 25-year anniversary is coming up. They've been telling, just beating into the heads of their viewers for the last 25 years, that they're the only people that you can trust. You know, if you are not watching Fox News every single night, the country might, you know, end. Your life is in danger, and we're the only ones that are going to tell you like the actual truth. And so all of that is culminating into what we're seeing right now, I think.
So you just highlighted the kind of fear that Fox News plays off of and maybe even instills in their viewers. I just want to follow up with like specifically MSNBC. Do their opinion people not do the same thing? Maybe not to the the level that Fox News does. You mentioned like baby parts and some truly disgusting things that I haven't seen, but maybe I need to follow your Twitter account more closely. So I'm just wondering, is what Fox does with the specifically what you just said, the hype and fear and hyperbole, is that similar on MSNBC? And is it more a symptom of what 24-hour news has turned into over the last couple of decades? Or is this unique to Fox News?
No, I mean, I think that's fair to a degree. But also, you know, let me be honest. I don't watch much MSNBC and CNN. I mean, after a full day of watching cable news, I'm not trying to turn on any news at that point. Now, I did watch quite a bit of MSNBC and CNN during the Fox years or the Trump years, and they whatever they air, it just does not have the same influence that Fox News has. So I don't think that you can point to, you know, mass shootings taking place because of a Chris Hayes monologue. You know, they just don't have the influence that Fox News has. And I keep going back to the way that Fox News has brainwashed their viewers into like, we're the only people you can trust and you have to watch us every single day. And if you don't, you might die. Your family might die. They are going to come for you. And that's what Fox News is all about. And so I don't see that on MSNBC and CNN. And now, you know, maybe MSNBC and CNN played up certain Trump things. I mean, I'll say it seems like they're ignoring the way that the Biden administration is taking care of immigrants right now at the border. But again, I mean, look, I get paid to watch Fox News. You know, I don't get paid to watch CNN and MSNBC, so I'm not really 100% up to speed how they've been covering the Biden administration at least recently. But I don't think they're great. I just don't see them as a danger the way that Fox News is.
So on that note, Andrew, I kind of wanted to ask you. You mentioned what Fox News does, why it's so distinct from what is going on with MSNBC and maybe outlets on the left. Is there no equivalent on the left? And in addition to that, where would you put in like OAN and Newsmax into that media ecosystem?
Okay, well, I'll get to OAN and Newsmax in a minute. But this, as far as the Fox News of the left, like this is something I've thought about quite a bit. And like, no, there's absolutely nothing equivalent to Fox News on the left. I think that like, you know, look, Fox News started out with Roger Ailes, who was the CEO. He was a former Reagan. I think he worked in the Reagan administration, something like that. And look, Roger Ailes is a monster. He sexually tortured his subordinates, like an absolute terrible person. But as far as like running Fox News goes, he saw Fox News. He knew Fox News was there to promote the Republican Party. Fox News was there to get Republicans elected. Since his passing, he died a few years ago and is rotting in hell. And since then, Fox News, it's completely been flipped on its head. At this point, the Republican Party exists to prop up Fox News and bump up Fox News's numbers. And now you take a look at like, you know, anybody that's listening to this is probably vaguely familiar with the political discourse in this country. I think you take a look at the way that critical race theory, for example, was just blasted on Fox News day after day. You take a look at the way the caravan a couple years ago, they tried to bring it back every year or so, but the way that it was just blasted day after day after day. Ebola, the Ebola virus, same thing. Benghazi, you know, another example. There is nothing on the left. There's no outlet on the left that takes an issue and just blasts it into people's faces over and over and over again until it becomes part of the public discourse, until it becomes something that politicians have to answer for and do something about. But Fox News does. They have that power. And I don't know, you know, it it just seems like Democrats, the left in general, they think that like the truth is on their side, and like we have the dignity, and we're the ones, we're the adults in the room, and people will end up seeing that. And that's just not the way it works. You know, there isn't that propaganda outlet that drives the conversation on the left the way that there is on the right. And I mean, I think a huge example, and I'm not just talking about Fox News at this point, like you have an entire ecosystem that, you know, when something happens, they're going all in on just look at the critical race theory, the Dr. Seuss stuff a couple of months ago. So you look at Ben Shapiro and his Daily Wire minions, and, you know, Clay Travis and Sports Talk. And there's this ecosphere where they're all making money. They're all making millions and millions of dollars by doing this. And it brings in people. I don't understand the draw, but they do have a draw. But there's just nothing like that on the left. There's nothing. I mean, look, you have some streamers, a few podcasts that are doing really well and on the left, but it's, you don't have this ecosystem the way that you do on the right.
You have a common refrain from people on the right that basically the establishment Democrats control corporate media, not only CNN and MSNBC, but mainstream outlets from print like Washington Post, New York Times, down to broadcast news. And I'm wondering, does mainstream media have a center-left bent? And is there any validity to these criticisms from people that are maybe center-right or right-right that believe that establishment Democrats ultimately control these organizations?
Absolutely not. And let me give you an example of something you said earlier when you were talking about your next guest on Monday, Representative Dingell. You described her as the moderate position fighting against the progressives. Why is she the moderate? Why aren't the progressives? The progressives are the ones that are fighting for Joe Biden's agenda right now. And there's more of them. There's more of them than the moderates. And the moderates are the ones that are the quote unquote moderates are the ones that are holding everything up. They're the ones that are out of touch with the mainstream. And if you take a look at the Build Back Better plan, the stuff in there polls extremely well across party lines. So, you know, why are we describing the people that are holding things up as the moderates when the ones we're describing as the progressives are much more in line with the American public right now? And you can go down the list on this, even the most progressives policies. You look at Medicare for All and the way that polls at 70%, but you never hear about that, you know, so why? And then I also want to get into a little bit like MSNBC, you know, as far as the liberal media thing. You know, two of their most popular hosts outside of primetime are Republicans. You know, Nicole Wallace was George Bush's press secretary. Then you've got Joe Scarborough in the morning for 3 hours a day. You know, and take a look at their guests. Take a look at who Meet the Press brings on. You know, Chuck Todd, my good friend Matt Negrin from The Daily Show points out all the time how they just bring on Republicans to push Republican talking points. You know, so no, like I don't think that's fair. I think more than pushing liberal interests, I do think that there's a corporate bent. I think that, like, you know, you take a look at the Afghanistan withdrawal, which was incredibly popular at first. But then you look at MSNBC, CNN, you take a look at the guests that they all brought on, their defense contractors, their former army generals. That's not liberal. That's not progressive. And now you're taking a look at Joe Biden's numbers on Afghanistan have flip-flopped, you know? So no, like I don't buy that. You know, I don't see any representation for Medicare for All in the media. I see very little representation for higher taxes on the rich. I'll throw on MSNBC sometimes and I'll see, people saying that nobody wants to work anymore, that there's a worker shortage because of government handouts, which is nonsense. So no, like I see the right and I see the conservative working the refs, and I think that it works. And I think you can take a look at the guests that Meet the Press brings on, and take a look at the guests on the Sunday shows, the topics that they choose to talk about. I think all of that leans way more into the Republican ideology, the ideology of the right, than it does the ideology of the left. And I'm not making this up. The policies that the left are pushing are much more popular than the right. So there's just I think the refs have been worked for years and years and years, and I think that's where we're at right now.
So is it fair to characterize the difference between a moderate without the, you know, conservative Democrats? We're not talking about them. But a moderate Democrat, maybe more of the middle of the caucus. Is it fair to characterize the difference between a moderate and a progressive the moderates being willing to fight for incremental change to ultimately achieve their larger policy goals, and progressives just being ideologues that are unwilling to budge and negotiate in good faith? Or is there some other type of that you would explain what a moderate is versus what a progressive is?
I think moderates enjoy getting corporate money. I reject this term of moderate, but since, it's being used, I'll use it. I think that they, to a certain degree, they like having their names in the paper. I think Joe Manchin, just for example, just wants to say no, just to say no. Right now he's saying $1.5 trillion. I think if the number started at $1.5 trillion, he would be saying, $1 trillion. It doesn't matter to him. The numbers don't actually matter to him. He wants to be able to go back home, and he wants to be able to run ads saying that I fought against the socialism of AOC. Like that's what he wants more than anything. And that's what he's going to end up getting. I think that as far as the machinations of everything, the way things work, what's realistic, unrealistic, like why is the left only the ones that are concerned about that? Like when Trump was in office, nobody said this isn't realistic. Who was it passed away? Scalia passed away, and Mitch McConnell held that seat for a year. Like they weren't concerned about norms at all. They were just concerned about getting stuff done. And that's what frustrates me about the Democratic Party more than anything. I think that, look, on the right, it's clear they will use authority tactics to get what they want. And what they want is, more money in the pocket of the rich. And I think that there's nothing wrong with using authoritarian tactics on the left to get what you want if it helps people. And I think that's what we have to at least push. I just don't see much of an effort, on the left. I think there are certain things that we can learn from the right, from the way that Republicans conduct themselves and the way that it's just about the bottom line, and 2 years from now, 3-4 years from now, I think that Democrats would be better served to go to send voters to the polls saying, look at the Build Back Better plan that we passed in full, right now as is, versus like going in 2024 and saying like, well, we could have done better, but at least it's cheaper. Like nobody really cares about that, right? I mean, it's ridiculous to think about that, to think about people caring about that 3 years from now. That's my frustration. I just don't see. I'm frustrated with why is the left always? Why are they the ones that have to be realistic? It feels like a double standard to me.
So real quick follow up here. I have to ask it, and then I do want to get into two more questions. Then we'll go to the audience. So if both sides are using authoritarian tactics, doesn't it not matter if the progressive or the conservative agenda goals are achieved? Because if both sides are using authoritarian tactics, doesn't that ultimately lead to the breakdown of our checks and balances, the breakdown of our system of government, and push us towards authoritarianism? Fascism isn't necessarily like a conservative or a liberal ideology. It's the means of implementing change through various steps, including violence and harsh authoritarian measures, regardless of what that change is. So that's my question. Isn't it more dangerous if both sides start to use these tactics, and doesn't it represent an existential threat when maybe we should be trying to pull both sides back away from the brink of, a cold political war?
But like, aren't we beyond the brink right now? Like, didn't January 6th prove that, and nobody's paying any price except for the people that were actually there. But like, as of right now, all the instigators, all the people that put all this stuff in motion, the people that sent buses up here, you say like, is it going to lead somewhere? Like we're already there, in my opinion, like this stuff is like, we're on a razor's edge right now, in my opinion, And look, when I say authoritarian tactics, I mean, what I'm talking about put a little bit of pressure on Manchin and Sinema. Like, I don't even see that happening right now. Not publicly, at least, I'm not talking about violence, let's absolutely not violence, but like, as far as like the way that the right pushes stuff through without giving a crap about the norms, they don't care about the laws. They make it up as they go. And the left doesn't do that. The left constrains themselves, because they think that that people care about the norms and people don't. People care about results. And that's my point more than anything, is we have to provide, we have to give people results. And this is all stuff that people want. So that's more my point than anything else. But as far as like worrying about like, or, you know, is there an existential threat? Like, I mean, I feel like we're past the point of threat right now. Like we're sort of living in it at this point. And I think January 6th proved that. And I think the fact that you still have the leader of the Republican Party, Donald Trump, out there saying that the election was stolen and you know, saying this, pushing for the election to still be overturned at his rallies. I mean, people are ignoring it, but he's still out there saying the election should be overturned. So, you know, it's, something needs to be done with that. So like why the left cannot just disarm. Yeah, there can't be unilateral disarmament, and that's what I see right now politically.
Okay, you meant hardball tactics.
Yeah.
And even if you are a personal friend, I still need to ask the tough question. So I do want to shift into your tactics at Media Matters, maybe the group, not you necessarily, and how you influence the information ecosystem. Is your rapid response just amplifying the worst voices on the right and giving them greater reach and influence?
Okay, so I actually get this question a lot, and I understand the question. I think it's preposterous, though. I think that, you know, look, you take a look at Tucker Carlson's viewership, and on his best nights, he gets about 3.5 million people, right? I have like 55,000 followers on Twitter. You know, Media Matters has like 400,000 followers on Twitter, and the majority of the people that follow me and that follow Media Matters are not sitting there watching Fox News. So, you know, it gets back to the influence that Fox News has on this country and has on politics and has on Republican politicians. And it's important that people know what they're saying. And people aren't going to sit there and watch Fox News for 12, 13 hours a day like we do at Media Matters. So I think it's important for, you know, it's important for people to know, like, when Republican politicians are out there saying that immigrants are coming to, like, replace white people, I think it's important that people know where that started and why it started and who's responsible for that. And that's just one small example. You know, I think that, like, if you take a look at, you know, you have on CNN, you have Brian Stelter and Oliver Darcy who are media critics, and they do a great job. But Media Matters, you know, we've got, I think, over 100 employees at this point, and that's all we do is monitor conservative media. And we have a large staff. And so, and I think we're capable of when a white supremacist shoots up a Walmart in El Paso because he thinks there's an invasion coming, we're able to the next day put out a study on how many times Fox News pushed the invasion rhetoric in the last month, for example, you know, and a lot of other places aren't able to do that. So, no, I don't think that, I don't think that we're promoting them more than they would be. But I think we're exposing them is how I would put it.
Okay. So then I'm going to take this from a little bit different of an angle. I think I know where you're going. I'm going to add a second question here, Andrew. Is tweet dunking and highlighting the worst arguments feeding into the cynicism, which is breaking down our political system and making it harder for your audience to engage with conservatives in good faith? And I guess a follow-up to that, so the second part of this, because I think this is important, should liberals and Democrats and progressives even attempt to center right conservatives in good faith to pass bipartisan legislation?
Well, you know, I'll say first, the system is what's creating the cynicism. You know, that's not, you know, I don't think that some cynical tweets what's creating the cynicism. I think it's people having unemployment benefits being cut off in the middle of a pandemic. I think it's people that know that they're stuck in a job that they hate and can't get out of because they need health insurance that isn't being provided by the state like it is in every single other developed country. You know, so I think those types of things, I think seeing that, like, Texas is taking out bounties, $10,000 bounties on women who want to get an abortion. Like, that's what's creating the cynicism. So, you know, I think that maybe there's some gallows humor that takes place online. But I mean, you know, what are you going to do? Like, you got to laugh sometimes. So, no, I don't think that's I think the cynicism comes from the system. And that any cynicism that you see online is sort of a reflection of that more than anything else. And I'm sorry, I forgot your second question.
Should engagement between between liberals with conservatives in the policymaking process, or are we past the point of engagement?
I think it depends on what we're talking about. You know, I think that you know, the job of our politicians is to make our lives better. And like, I don't think that you should negotiate down from that. So, you know, like we're sitting here and I'm, you know, I'm just thinking right now about Joe Manchin saying that we need means testing on, you know, community colleges and stuff like that. Like, why, you know, like free community colleges would actually make America a much better place, like much better, like for everyone, much better, you know, have more people getting educated, and not falling into debt, would make America a much better place. I mean, you get rid of college debt right now, and America's a better place. People have more spending money. They're buying more houses. They're, you know, stuff like that. And so, you know, it depends on what we're negotiating over. But I think largely, like, why is it always the progressives that have to negotiate down is the deal. It just seems like it's always the progressives that are caving to the moderates. And, you know, I think you take a look at the mess this country is in, and I think that's one reason, basically.
On that note, let's get to the audience. So we are going to go to Greg Sattell first, and then we will go to Jim next. Greg, over to you.
Thanks, Justin. And I really enjoyed listening to you, Andrew. And I thought you made a lot of really, really, really strong points, especially about the sort of both sidisms that aren't really factually based. But I would like to play, you know, devil's advocate for a minute. Let's say, for instance, that we pass a $1.9 trillion reconciliation bill on top of the $1.2 trillion, which is really, let's say, $600 billion additional. You know, we're looking over the next, you know, 10 years of, you know, $2.5 trillion, which is, you know, $250 billion a year, which is basically 1% of GDP of stimulus, all for things that are very, very popular. Isn't that a win? And just because the Democrats have such a narrow majority, isn't there something to be said for, you know, seeing how that goes, for, you know, making sure that, you know, you look at Obamacare 10 years ago, getting through what they could get through wasn't everything everybody wanted, but it made the country immeasurably better off. And we're still, and there's still a huge support for building on it. So doesn't that make not only some sort of logical sense, but isn't there also some political sense to it?
Hey, Greg, first I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your kind words. And I mean, look, I see that. I see that point. I think that, but like, why? I just don't understand. You know, right now with Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema,
if I could be a bit more pointed.
Of course, yeah.
You know, when we do think, when, you know, one logical or operational piece to it can be just by making the programs, paring the ambitions down a little bit, we can focus them more and make sure that we are not, you know, just starting huge programs big, that we're sort of getting them in and a little bit smaller, making sure we're doing them right, and then investing in success rather than investing in, let's say, position papers.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, I think that, but when you say like investing a little bit less, like I think that, you know, I can say like I live a pretty comfortable life, you know, and there's a lot of people out there that aren't as fortunate as I am, that are desperate from help. And like these people, there's people living on the streets, there's people who, you know, are getting charged $30,000 for having a baby, for getting pregnant, you know, that from the hospital, from their insurance, stuff like that. And paring stuff down like that there's just so many people out there that need help that, like, you know, I don't care about bipartisanship as much as I think we should be focused on helping these people. And you know, look, at the end of the day, you want as much as you can possibly get. And that's all. I don't see the fight in the left to do that, as I see them so willing to cave to these two senators that really have no power outside of the 50th and 49th votes. And that's just infuriating, and I'm not seeing any pressure on them. There's so many people out there that need help. And so when you talk about, like, we're paring down, we're cutting, well, we're gonna cut unemployment insurance, you know, well, there's people that are out of jobs that are trying to make rent in the middle of a pandemic, you know. We're not gonna include dental and vision and Medicare and Medicaid until 2028. Well, why? What's even the point of that, other than saving a few bucks in the meantime so they can say that we pared it down? You know, and that doesn't help people. In the next 5 years, you've got people that are out there that need help, you know, dental and vision insurance, and they're not going to have it. And so that's like, I just want to see Democrats fighting a little bit more for that stuff. And you're right, today, like, you get what you can get. But I just don't see the fight in the left that I see in the right, the nonstop just bashing over the heads of, like, this is our talking point, this is what we want, and we're coming at, you know, look at what the Tea Party did in primarying people that weren't along for the ride. I think there's a lot that the left can learn from that. I think when you take a look at the way that Donald Trump is kicking out anybody in the party that isn't loyal to him, you know, I don't want those type of loyalty tests to one person. I think that's disgusting. But, like, as far as policy and what we want to accomplish and what we want to do, like, I think there needs to be some of that on the left.
We will go to Jim, and then we will go to Collier. Jim, over to you, good friend.
Thank you, my friend. And Andre, first of all, let me echo Greg's words. I've thought it was very insightful. Greatly enjoyed your commentary and agree 100% with what you've been presenting. Going back to the Fox News situation, let me make a comparison to the war on drugs. The war on drugs has been rightly criticized as a failure because all of the efforts have been largely around attacking and stemming the supply without any concept of demand. And, you know, the bottom line is that the Fox News opinion hours polls as well as it does and has consistently presented as long as it has because it has a demand in an audience. The audience isn't drying up. It's only getting bigger. What do we think we do about the socio-cultural problem that we have with white fragility and all those other elements, as well as just socioeconomically, you know, disenfranchised folks that are driving that demand? And as you well know, you set Fox aside as a conservative outlet and dive one level deeper into OAN and then the communications between Oath Keepers and the like, and it gets really crazy. That's still a demand and something that's out there. How do we think we stem that tide?
Yeah, that's really a great question. I think that, like, first of all, I mean, just measuring cable news success by viewers, I think is one of the reasons, like, why we're in this mess as far as cable news goes. Like, you know, you can put up professional wrestling on Fox News or on MSNBC, and it would get great ratings. That doesn't make it news. And a lot of times, I mean, that's what Fox News does. They have Dog the Bounty Hunter looking for Brian Laundrie right now. Like, it's making a mockery of the whole thing, but it's getting a lot of clicks. You know, so I, as far as what we do about that, you know, I don't know how you turn people away from this. You know, like I said a little bit earlier, it's just been beaten into their heads for the last two decades that Fox News and conservative media is the only ones that you can trust. Everybody else out there is an evil socialist lib. They're coming for all of your money. They're coming for your kids. They're not going to let you make any choices that you want. You have to listen to us every single day or you're in mortal danger. And so there's just nothing like that. How do you get through to those people? I don't really know. I think that explaining to them that they're all Marx could maybe work, you know, that this is a big grifting operation. And I'll go back to the vaccine mandate commentary that's been going on for a while on Fox News. You know, they're all sitting there every single day. They're submitting to a vaccine mandate and then they go on air and they attack vaccine mandates without mentioning Fox's, without saying that they're submitting to it on their own. And there was a Daily Beast article last week, I think it was, where a Fox News insider acknowledged that hypocrisy, but said, hey, you know what? We're getting great ratings on it. I mean, there's nothing really that you can do about that. And that is frustrating. And I think, you know, hopefully, eventually, their audience will wake up and see that they're being lied to. Their unvaccinated friends and family are passing away because, you know, this conservative media ecosystem has been tearing into the vaccines for the last 6-7 months. But I don't know. I mean, there's people out there that are taking their last breaths in an ICU unit that are still saying that COVID is a hoax. You know, what do you do about those people? I don't know. I'm really not the one to ask about that. But I agree with you. It is a huge issue. But like I said earlier, I think the biggest issue is that's how we're measuring success. Because that doesn't mean that people are getting good information. It means that people are being told what they want to hear. I mean, you're not going to turn into a show every single night to watch something that you don't want to hear. So there's a lot of money to be made in telling people exactly what they want to hear while giving it that veneer of news and making it look like it's intellectually sound and using the words that people want to hear. There's a lot of money to be made in that. And at that point, I mean, money's involved. What are you going to do? So I wish I had a better answer for you, man. I really do. But I just don't on this one.
Thanks very much, Mr. Jim. We will go to Collier next, and we will go to Joe and then Kelly. So Collier, over to you.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just wanted to ask, because you were talking about a lot of the biases in reporting, and I wanted to know in terms of the way that typical what's labeled as left-wing media reports on things like election bills in states that weren't exactly accurate, or the role the parliamentarian plays in the reconciliation process that resulted in death threats toward Elizabeth, and how we can combat those types of things, or how you think that's not necessarily a bias in that sector of the media.
Yeah, I could you be a little bit more specific about as far as the misinformation that you think is taking place there?
Yeah, just the way that the actual procedure works and acting like she is this all-powerful being that can strike things down, and that resulted in her getting death threats. And also for examples of election bills, a lot of the coverage of the Georgia bill was not necessarily accurate in terms of people like Joy Reid and Stacey Abrams saying that there was a photo ID requirement and a lot of these things in the bill that weren't actually there. I work in election policy, just to preface this, and also congressional procedure policy. So these are things that I found troubling in terms of, you know, the information that people were getting.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I'll start out with the election bills. I mean, look, if there's misinformation out there, it should be corrected and it should be pointed out. And, you know, if Joy Reid said I'm not a Joy Reid expert or MSNBC expert. I don't watch that show or that network much at all. But if she didn't issue a correction on that, then I mean, that's she should, you know. And so, again, I don't know exactly what you're talking about or the segments or anything like that. But I mean, misinformation should be corrected 100% of the time. And then as far as the Senate parliamentarian goes, death threats shouldn't happen, you know, and I hope that he that made the death threats towards her is arrested and found out and exposed. I mean, that's terrible. I don't think that, you know, if the Senate parliamentarian rules on something, I think the public should know about that. But I don't think that simply reporting on that is going to create death threats or shouldn't. So I'm just not 100% familiar with either one of those two things, but any misinformation should be corrected. And I certainly hope anybody that makes a death threat, I that's no fun. I've gotten plenty of death threats and it's scary. And I've had to talk to the FBI and stuff in the past. It's no fun. So I hope anybody who makes any death threats is exposed and faces consequences for that.
Thank you very much, Collier. We will go to Joe and then Kelly, and then we will go to John Gunnison.
Perfect. Yeah. So first, thanks for taking the time to hop on. I was really taken by something that you were saying in terms of like the separation, the difference between Fox News and the right and, you know, these other media outlets, which obviously, like you've mentioned on multiple times already, like they are not your area of X, not what you cover. But in terms of like the difference, it sounded like the biggest things, there were 2 points that you were mentioning, which is one, that you know, these opinions are uniquely dangerous. And you pointed to a couple examples of shootings at like Planned Parenthood, et cetera. There've been other examples brought up of, you know, similar instances on the left of violence. But beyond that, the point that I was going to kind of, I was really curious about was you were mentioning the reach, right? And the power that in particular Fox News has. Now, I was kind of surprised by this as a point in the negative, which is that, you know, it, like, isn't viewership kind of more of an indicator of, and therefore, like the popularity and widespread belief in these things? And like, if we follow, like, just responding with the last one, like, you know, if these are people who are feeding others beliefs that they want to hear, isn't this kind of an indicator that these beliefs and opinions are perhaps a bit more popular and almost mainstream than we would all, than you know, many would like to think?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I just, you know, look, I want to hear that I look like Ryan Reynolds, you know, that's a very popular opinion with me, but like, it's not true, you know? So, I mean, I think that the news's job isn't to reinforce what you believe, it's to tell you the truth, you know, that it's to give you the news. And, you know, again, Fox News is enforcing a vaccine mandate, but yet they're being pretty vocal attacking vaccine mandates. And when asked why, it's because they get good ratings. That's dangerous, you know? So no, just because something is popular, I don't think that makes it newsworthy at all. And, you know, I think equating viewership to success in the industry is, I think it's one of the reasons why we're here. You know, I think that people want to hear what they want to hear. They don't want to necessarily hear what's true. So, you know, you say like ideology, like we're not talking about things here like they want lower taxes. That's not what's drawing in viewers right now. What's drawing in viewers right now is saying that the vaccine doesn't work and that mandates are Jim Crow, you know? And that's, I think that's hurting the country. And I think Fox News has a responsibility. You know, I think as Tucker Carlson is the most watched cable news host in America, and I think he has a responsibility to give people like the truth and like to understand that what he says people are going to do and they're going to take to heart. So when he sits there and he says people that the vaccine is killing people, thousands of people is what he said. I mean, that's not true, but he's out there saying it. But that's gonna keep you. And I'm, you know, if you're sitting there and you don't know much about this stuff, you're getting all your news from Tucker Carlson, you're going to turn in the next day because he's the only one telling you that the vaccine might kill you. You know, nobody else is saying that. And well, if he's the only one saying it, then I need to tune in because like my life is on the line at this point. So no, I mean, I don't equate viewership to good cable news programming at all. I think it's a huge mistake. And, you know, I said it after the election when CNN was bragging about their ratings topping Fox News at the time. I said it the same time then. It's dumb for CNN to tout their ratings. That does not equate with good cable news programming, in my opinion.
Okay. We will go John Gunnison and then we'll try Julie. John, over to you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Andrew and Justin. So Andrew, I just want to know a little bit more about what's going on inside of Fox. So we were talking about Roger Ailes, and in the Roger Ailes era, it was very clear who the decision maker was and where the responsibility and accountability lied. And I think that maybe for those of us on the outside, it's a little bit of a more confusing picture now in the post-Ailes era. Can you tell us who you think are the key decision makers, if there's more than one, or who the decision maker? How much time are Rupert Murdoch and Lachlan actually spending making decisions on a day-to-day basis? Or are there other people more at the executive level who we should look at as the new Ailes?
It's Tucker Carlson, period. I mean, you take a look at his show. His show sets the talking points for the entire network. You know, last week he came out and once again fully endorsed the white nationalist, white supremacist, great replacement theory. The rest of the week it was all over Fox News. You know, if he starts talking about Dr. Seuss, everybody's going to talk about Dr. Seuss. It's Tucker Carlson's network at this point. They've expanded his role there. He has a Fox Nation show, which is their streaming service as well. He's showing up all over the place, all across that network. It's Tucker Carlson, and he has full reign at this point. There's nothing he could do or say that would get him fired. When I say that, I mean there is nothing he could do or say that would get him fired. I think part of that is Lachlan, Suzanne Scott, who I think her official title is CEO. I think they don't want to look like they're giving into cancel culture, giving into matters or anything like that. So they're going to keep pumping out this filth every single night. But it's Tucker Carlson is in complete control of Fox News right now. What he says goes. Shep Smith was one of their, the reporters with integrity that they had there for a while. He lost a fight with Tucker Carlson, and Fox News got rid of him, and now he's on CNBC. So, it's the Tucker Carlson network at this point, which is mind-boggling when you take a look at his life and his career. He's fired in every other TV job he had before. He's a trust fund baby. He's one of the elitists that he claims that he hates and is speaking out against and all that. But that guy is Fox News at this point.
Yeah, it's funny, Andrew, because just like you alluded to, he worked for both of the other cable news networks, CNN and MSNBC, before Fox. I'd also like to ask if I can just get a follow-up. If it really is Tucker's network editorially, how do you think the other major personalities are reacting to this? I know that Ben Smith wrote a big article that was kind of exposing Tucker as an anti-Fox leak machine, that he had given Brian Stelter tons of dirt from the inside of Fox that Brian had used as the basis for his big book on Fox. And we know that Mark Levin had a big reaction to this on the air, where he was directly criticizing Tucker for, feeding the enemy stories about the inside of Fox. How are people like Hannity, Laura Ingraham, the other major personalities, how are they kind of interacting with Tucker? What do they think about the power he has at the network right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. Mark Levin did go off on Tucker. It was really funny. Without naming him, without mentioning his name, but it's pretty clear who he was talking about. I'll say that it doesn't really matter, what they all think of Tucker. He's the big dog down there right now. And again, I'm just giving my opinion now on this. This is not inside information that I have through sources or anything like that. It seems like him and Hannity aren't really very fond of each other at this point. They're handoffs from show to show. They do the little bumper in between shows together, where they jib jab for a couple of seconds. That's gotten pretty cold, and they've gotten shorter and shorter. But he does, Tucker Carlson, as far as he seems like a charming fellow, he seems affable. I mean, if you were sitting down, you had no idea who he was, and he sat down next to you and you started talking about, how the weather is outside, probably be a nice conversation. So it doesn't seem like there's a real vitriol throughout the building there for him, but then there was a report, it had to have been over a year ago now, where one of his writers was fired for posting on white supremacy, of posting like racist and sexist stuff on a message board, Blake Neff. And there was actually a phone call between Fox News management and some of their black employees where they were upset that one of them, I don't want to say the name because I don't even know, I don't know for sure who it was, but so that they were upset that Tucker Carlson was, and this is a quote, was running a white supremacist cell inside of Fox News. So I know that there's some friction there as well, as far as the white supremacy that Tucker is on a nightly basis is festering inside of Fox News and causing some issues there. But I mean, Tucker's not going anywhere, and since then he's been promoted and getting more airtime and more shows and all of that. So I think the majority of the people at Fox News at this point know that if you want to succeed there, you better be on Tucker's good side.
Thank you for that, Mr. John Gunnison. We will go to Kelly. Let's try you out again.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes. Bingo, bango, bongo.
I'm glad it's working. Justin, thank you for having this. And Andrew, thanks for joining us. I think that you're right in that there is a credibility crisis, especially as it relates to politics and the way people are consuming media in general. You started out by saying that Media Matters is in place to provide like transparency and bring truth to what a lot of these bad actors are saying, doing, the lies they may be spreading. And you initially said that you, I'm not sure if you meant you specifically or Media Matters, but that, you know, you don't just watch Fox, you watch the other networks. But then a couple of times after that, you said you didn't watch Fox. So that's like the first part of this. But then the second part is specifically when Collier brought up something that was reported on that led to death threats, you responded to her saying that you didn't see how reporting or journalism would or should lead to that. And, you know, you definitely hope that those people are prosecuted or dealt with by the law in the appropriate way. But, you know, earlier in the interview, you mentioned how Fox's reporting had led to death threats, even acts of violence against, for example, like abortion clinics. And the last part of this is that, you know, you state that truth and transparency and, you know, making sure that people understand what Fox News is doing. That's why you guys do this. That's why you watch for 14 hours a day. That's why you make sure that you're letting everyone, you know what's going on. But you also say that your audience isn't anyone who would watch Fox News. So I guess I'm curious, like, in what way do you think it's important for Media Matters and you specifically, because you're the one that's here, to maintain your own credibility and to make sure that you seem to come across, you know, with a higher level of integrity than a lot of what you're discussing. And if you're not reaching to find the people who may be hearing this misinformation, these lies, these things that you say are dangerous, then it seems like all you're doing is expanding the reach of Fox. So, you know, if that's not how you see it, like what is your ultimate goal and how important to you is the credibility that you portray?
Yeah, sure. I'll try to get to all of your questions, and if I forget one, forgive me. I think first of all, with the MSNBC and CNN question, I'm sorry if I was unclear earlier, but I personally, what I meant is Media Matters looks for conservative misinformation seeping into more mainstream or even left-wing outlets. That's not my job. My job is Fox News centric, very Fox News centric. You know, the Senate parliamentarian thing, I mean, I'm just not familiar with that. Like, I don't want to speak too much to the details of that because I didn't see reports of the death threats to her or anything like that. You know, the death threats are terrible and they're horrible. But you know, we had the El Paso shooting. I don't know, like I can draw a direct line between the baby parts in Denver, George Tiller, the Walmart shooter in El Paso, the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh. I can draw a direct line from what motivated those people to Fox News, to rhetoric that was being said on Fox News. The Senate parliamentarian thing, I don't know enough. I don't know if the death threats mentioned Joy Reid or if they mentioned the New York Times or anything like that. So, I mean, if I did, that would be easier. And like, yeah, then that's, you know, that's awful. But I just, like, there. So I don't know what inspired those death threats in particular. And I know for a fact that Fox News inspired these, you know, these shootings. There's mountains of evidence for it. The last question you have, as far as like, are we just promoting these people again? Like when the Great Replacement stuff that, Tucker really started, pushing probably about a month or so ago. And what this white supremacist conspiracy theory is that Democrats are trying to bring immigrants to replace white people so that the immigrants will vote for Democrats because, first of all, I don't understand why Republicans think that they can't get immigrants who have earned the right to vote, why they can't get them to vote Republican. You know, the reason why Democrats have 50 right now in the Senate is because they went into Georgia and they convinced people to vote for them. And Republicans just think they can't do that with immigrants who have become citizens and have earned the right to vote. But also that led to a lot of outrage. It led to the ADL calling for Tucker to be fired. It led to more pressure on advertisers, stuff like without Media Matters pointing that stuff out, where that conspiracy came from, all of that stuff, it would have been isolated inside his little bubble, inside the ecosystem, and where it's allowed to grow and fester without any sort of pushback whatsoever. And so, like I said, I think it's really important that people that aren't watching Fox News And that don't agree with this stuff, that they understand, like, what's, you know, why is all of a sudden the entire Republican Party saying that immigrants are coming to replace white people? Well, this is why. It's because the most popular cable news host in America is pushing that disgusting conspiracy theory. So, you know, I get that question a lot, and I I want to say that I understand it, but it's I don't think it's an accurate representation of what we do at all. I mean, you know, my tweets will get my Tucker tweets that go super viral will get, you know what, 1 million views at the most, and that's happened like 4 times in the last 4 years, maybe. That's a third of Tucker's real audience. So and it leads to action against Tucker. It leads to people knowing what he's saying and what he is. I mean, when Tucker first started, nobody thought of him as a white supremacist or as a white nationalist. And, you know, I didn't just start calling him that because of, like, I wanted to, just to try to hurt him or anything. It's because what I saw, you know. And now it's, you know, people understand. People know that he is pushing white supremacist talking points every single night as the most popular cable news host in America. And so I think we're providing a service to people that want it going on in politics and the media, but they don't want to sit there and watch all day, every day.
Thank you for that. We will go to Sequoia, and then we will go then we'll just wrap it up. So we'll go to Sequoia as the last question.
Great. Can you hear me okay, Justin?
Yes, we got you.
Great, great, great show. And my question has to do with the fairness doctrine. And if you think that maybe a return to some aspects, maybe a modernized version of the fairness doctrine might help to get rid of the kind of disinformation that Fox News seems to be proliferating across the airwaves. So that's my main question. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think that I think that's a good question, and it's a fair question. And I mean, I think it would help, but I also think there's like less than 0% chance it'll ever happen again. It's just so far down the list of legislative priorities. It would cause such a huge uproar, and the pushback from this entire right-wing media ecosphere that I've been talking about for the last hour, the outrage from them would just it would force an almost immediate surrender on trying to get that. So I just don't see it. Like, yeah, I do think it would help. But I don't think there's any chance it will ever happen.
Andrew, first, are we watching the Bucks Patriots game together and rooting against each other's teams? And then next, what do you want to leave the audience with?
Let me text you later about the Bucks Patriots. I do need some Brady time. So it's been Brady your dog for anybody that's
joining
a little bit later. And then what was your second question?
What do you want to leave the audience with here?
The conservative media ecosphere is their viewers for money. That's all it is. It's a big money grab, and they're winning right now. And they're grifting their viewers and their listeners.
All right. Well, we hope you join us in 2 weeks for when Rich Lowry comes on the show, so you can ask.
Thank you. I appreciate this, though, man. This was fun. I enjoyed it immensely. I hope I did okay.
You did great. And see our audience members like Jim, Sequoia, Kelly, Collier. The list goes on and on, and they are respectful, even though you did get some conservatives asking you questions, so I told you it wouldn't be that bad. That's why we're different than anything else. We actually legitimately have conservatives and Democrats and socialists and all theists come questions. But thank you very much, Andrew.
Thanks again, man. Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
That's all we have for you today. Again, huge thanks to Andrew for coming out, to our audience for their great questions, and to you for being here. If you like or dislike what you hear, if you want to find more information about how to join us live almost every day of the week, maybe ask one of our upcoming guests a question, or if you want to hear past episodes, please visit our website, pm101.live or pm101.club. They both work and will get you to the same place where you can find all that and more. This has been Politics and Media 101. I'm Jeff Browning. On behalf of our co-founder, Justin Higgins, and our team, thank you very much for being here. We hope to see you and hear from you soon.